are sorting through the executive orders after Donald Trump was inaugurated as the 47th president. He sat down and signed, we believe to be around 200 executive orders. And joining us, CBS legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum. Thane, good morning.
Good morning. Good hearing your voice.
I would imagine you've been busy kind of sorting through these executive orders. For us uneducated in the legal world, what is an executive order? What does it legally mean and what does it do?
Well, it grants the president the executive authority as the country's chief executive to unilaterally establish policy that's done without the vote of Congress. Sometimes it includes funding for programs that don't exist. And the, as you know, Congress is responsible for what's called for the power of the purse. They decide spending. And so you're talking about an expedited process that overrides the separation of powers, where the president unilaterally takes action to create policy and to even establish programs. So we've seen this much more often in the last several administrations. The presidential power was always there, but it was never exercised as often. So everything from Donald Trump's building of the wall the first time to the Muslim travel ban. You may remember the DACA program was started by President Obama. He couldn't get it through Congress. He had no capacity for immigration reform, so he just created it. And it's been in place ever since. The Supreme Court has ruled on it several times. So it's really just a fast-track method for the president to act unilaterally without the normal checks and balances. That comes after. Many of these things that he signed yesterday will probably be challenged in the courts.
Well, certainly, Thane, one of those is the there's already suits against the birthright executive order in which Donald Trump is apparently trying to go around the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, or am I wrong?
No, that's exactly what he's doing. Look, you know, the position that we've had, certainly post-Civil War amendments and post-Civil War, and then, of course, the great wave of immigration in the 1880s, which brought, you know, that's when the United States really beefed up its population, was that if you were born in this country, you were automatically granted citizenship. No one ever questioned that. Obviously, former African slaves were born here, and they weren't granted citizenship, so their children would be granted a citizenship. But the question became, what happens if you enter the country illegally? And so Donald Trump has said, you know, in the last number of years, especially during the last administration, we now have 10 million people who don't have citizenship, are undocumented. We don't even know where they are, but they've had children. And so they call that oftentimes anchor babies, right? Making it hard to deport because the children are, in fact, American citizens. So this just establishes Donald Trump's intention to do all that he can to remove and deport people who arrived illegally, and to not have birthright citizenship result as an impediment to that removal process.
We're with CBS legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum. Let's move to another executive order, pardoning of about 1,500 people charged in January 6th activities of 4 years ago at the U.S. Capitol, commuting the sentences of leaders of the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers. A lot of people between that and Joe Biden's preemptive pardons, the pardons, everybody's getting pardoned. What are the legalities, though, of this in particular?
Well, the Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution grants the president the pardon of the power to pardon and to provide clemency. President Biden already pardoned his son. The difference there is that the son was facing, he pled guilty and was facing significant jail time. And so he pardoned his son to make sure that that didn't have to happen. The question that we've seen in the last few days are, well, what about these preemptive pardons? You know, where President Biden is saying, I don't want my brother or anyone else in my family. Remember, one thing that came out of the Hunter Biden cases, especially the ones in Los Angeles, is the unaccounted for funding where millions of dollars were given to him without a sense of what the quid pro quo was and whatever role he was supposed to play. And he somehow managed to filter that money to all of the other family members. So I'm sure President Trump, Biden is saying, well, you know, to the extent to which there's an enemies list, they may come after the entire Biden family to strip us of our wealth, however it is that we achieved it. So I assume that's what he's concerned about, that, you know, the poisonous tree of Hunter could spread out to other family members. I don't think there are any other crimes. I think it's just some way to figure out, well, why, how did all this money enter the United States through all these foreign companies without Hunter even registering as a foreign agent? So that's what they're trying to forestall. And with respect to January 6th, you know, many of those people are still in jail 4 years later or 3 years later. And, you know, Donald Trump's position is that they were treated harshly. You know, remember, most of the people who were prosecuted weren't prosecuted for there. No one was prosecuted for an insurrection, not even Donald Trump. A handful were prosecuted for something called seditious conspiracy. But the vast majority of them, hundreds and hundreds, were in jail for relatively lower level crimes and very harsh sentences for lower level crimes. So that's Donald Trump's position. You overpunished people who got a little excited. It wasn't an organized insurrection. People who rioted during Black Lives Matter protests and burned police precincts and police cars, they didn't spend any time in jail. That doesn't seem fair. Where's the equal protection? So I'm sure that's Donald Trump's argument, even though it's controversial.
Thane, is there anything that stands out with all this blizzard of paperwork that came out of the Oval Office last night? Anything that stands out to you that you found unusual or intriguing?
The resurrection of the Enemies Alien Act was intriguing legally. That was something that we established in, I think, 1798 to somehow keep us out of war with France and England. And that's been lingering. That basically says that if you are we're at war with a country where you come from, and you know, if you're whatever native you are of, and we're at war with your country, we have the right to imprison you and deport you. And that has been used three times in the past: the War of 1812, the First World War, and the Second World War. Japanese, Italians, Germans were jailed, if not deportation proceedings commenced, based on the principle that you are an alien of our enemy with which we are at war. Donald Trump wants to do that for the cartels. He wants to say that the cartels are an invading army, and that we are implicitly at war with them. So we should be able to automatically strip them of their citizenship and deport them. But we're not in a declared war. This is not like World War I and World War II and the War of 1812. He's basically saying the cartels are foreign governments, and what they do is tantamount to invading the United States. It's an interesting legal argument. You know, he has both houses of Congress. All he really needs to do is enforce the immigration laws, and he can achieve the same thing. But I thought it was sending a very strong message of resurrecting something that hasn't been around for, you know, many, many years as a way to say, yes, again, look how serious I am about illegal immigration.
Thane, really great information. Thanks for your input, as always. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Very kind of you. Good to hear your voice. Bye-bye.
CBS legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum.
He is. I just He's my favorite guest that we bring on to talk about these big legal matters in Washington.
Well, the way he sorts through them and puts himself in the mindset and kind of works through,
I learn something every time.
Yes, that's